Okay, we're going to finish this little subsection today. And there's two verses that have a hammer in the right hand and a hammer in the left hand, and the verses are hammering the same points. Text 41 and 42, Canto 3, Chapter 31, The Movements of the Living Entities. The subsection is very focused on the number one attraction in the living entity's sojourn in the material world, the attraction for male-female association or sex life, and the anticipation of happiness from that activity and that association and so forth. The charms of a woman endowed by Prakriti, by Maya, even very powerful men. Anthony and Cleopatra, Prabhupada's one of his favorite punching bags. That powerful hero, king, warrior, controlled by the charms and the beauty of Cleopatra. To speak of everybody else. So the advice is, Vedic culture provides for a restriction of association, particularly intimate association, but other forms of association can lead to that. Text 41. A living entity who, as a result of attachment to a woman, in his previous life, has been endowed with the form of a woman, foolishly looks upon Maya, in the form of a man, her husband, as the bestower of wealth, progeny, house, and other material assets. This is how a woman similarly views the man as the facilitator of enjoyment. Purport. From this verse, it appears that a woman is also supposed to have been a man in his, parentheses her, previous life, and due to his attachment to his wife, he now has the body of a woman. In Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavad Gita confirms this, semicolon. A man gets his next life's birth according to what he thinks of at the time of death. If someone is too attached to his wife, naturally he thinks of his wife at the time of death. And in the next life, he takes the body of a woman. Similarly, if a woman thinks of her husband at the time of death, naturally she gets the body of a man in the next life. In Hindu scriptures, therefore, woman's chastity and devotion to man is greatly emphasized. A woman's attachment to her husband may elevate her to the body of a man in her next life, but a man's attachment to a woman will degrade him, and in this next life he will get the body of a woman. We should always remember, as it is stated in Bhagavad Gita, that both the gross and subtle material bodies are dresses, semicolon. They are the shirt and coat of the living entity. To be either a woman or a man only involves one's bodily dress. The soul in nature is actually the marginal energy of the Supreme Lord. Every living entity being classified as energy is supposed to be originally a woman or one who is enjoyed. In the body of a man, there is a greater opportunity to get out of the material clutches, semicolon, there is less opportunity in the body of a woman. In this verse, it is indicated that the body of a man should not be misused through forming an attachment to women and thus becoming too entangled in material enjoyment, which will result in getting the body of a woman in the next life. long paragraph. Keeps going. A woman is generally fond of household prosperity, ornaments, furniture, and dresses. She is satisfied when the husband supplies all these things sufficiently. The relationship between man and woman is very complicated. But the substance is that one who aspires to ascend to the transcendental stage of spiritual realization should be very careful in accepting the association of a woman. In the stage of Krishna consciousness, however, such restriction of association may be slackened, because if a man's and woman's attachment is not to each other but to Krishna, then both of them are equally eligible to get out of the material entanglement and reach the abode of Krishna. Good news, huh? As it is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, anyone who seriously takes to Krishna consciousness, whether in the lowest species of life, or a woman, or the less intelligent class, such as the mercantile or laborer class, will go back home, back to Godhead, and reach the abode of Krishna. A man should not be attached to a woman, nor should a woman be attached to a man. Both man and woman should be attached to the service of Krishna, service of the Lord. Then there is the possibility of liberation from material entanglement for both of them. So I'm going to do the next one, so we're done with this section. It has the therefore word. Therefore, a woman should consider her husband, her house, and her children to be the arrangement of the external energy of the Lord for her death, just as the sweet singing of the hunter is death for the deer. Purport. In these instructions of Lord Kapila Deva, it is explained that not only is a woman the gateway to hell for man, but man is also the gateway to hell for woman. It is a question of attachment. A man becomes attached to a woman because of her service, her beauty, and many other assets. And similarly, a woman becomes attached to a man for his giving her a nice place to live, ornaments, dress, and children. It is a question of attachment for one another. As long as either is attached to the other for such material enjoyment, the woman is dangerous for the man, and the man is also dangerous for the woman. But if the attachment is transferred to Krishna, both of them become Krishna conscious, and then marriage is very nice. Srila Rupa Goswami therefore recommends Anasaktasya Vishayan Yattarham Upayunjitaha Nirbanda Krishna Sambandhe Yuktam Vairagyam Uchate. Man and woman, just three sentences remaining. It's kind of like a summary of the whole thing. Man and woman should live together as householders in relationship with Krishna only for the purpose of discharging duties in the service of Krishna. Engage the children, engage the wife, and engage the husband, all in Krishna conscious duties, and then all these bodily or material attachments will disappear. Since the via medium is Krishna, the consciousness is pure, and there is no possibility of degradation at any time. There were times when Prabhupada was reflecting on his days in Vrindavan when he was residing at the Radha Damodar temple. it was in his vanaprastha stage, because his children were mature, the business that he had developed, they were capable of managing the business. So when he left home, his wife was cared for, the children had their means of maintenance and the way to take care of his wife, and so forth, so that he could carry on with his vanaprastha activities in Vrindavan. Then came this invitation, or there was even stronger recommendation, even stronger insistence by Keshava Maharaj, who was a resident sannyasi in the Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's temple in Mathura, not far from Vrindavan. Srila Prabhupada would frequent that place, and Keshava Maharaj, hearing that Srila Prabhupada had been given this instruction by Bhaktisiddhanta to preach in the Western countries, he was then encouraging him, pushing him to take sannyas, because this will assist you in your fulfilling the instruction of Bhaktisiddhanta. It's certainly not necessary that one becomes a sannyasi in order to give the message of Krishna. But the mission was a very great mission, full dedication, full absorption, which is the duty of a qualified grihastha, or qualified vanaprastha, but it's specifically mandated for sannyas. So in any case, Prabhupada described that it was very difficult. Difficult because vows are meant to be upheld, and you take a vow, then you must uphold it. And at least he was describing, there was some attachment to a wife, to his children, and it was difficult. Now, whether it was difficult or not difficult, and he was just saying that it was difficult, on many occasions he described difficult. And if it's difficult for Srila Prabhupada, then what to speak of others? The tendency to become attached to things that are temporary is part of the world that we live in. The replacement, we're hearing, the replacement of that attachment is attachment to Krishna. Specific to family life, wife is attached to Krishna, husband is attached to Krishna. Doesn't mean they just live together. They really don't care about each other. They only care about Krishna. That's not the case. It's not possible, nor is it desirable. Not the message. Don't care about your spouse. Don't care about your children. Just care about Krishna. Some persons have that mistaken idea. It's a mistaken idea. How can there be proper family life without affection for one another? There must be. There will be. There should be. The message, rather, is focus that affection upon he who is at the center, or Radha Krishna at the center. Our relationship between family members is to assist one another in carrying out loving service to Krishna. At least that's our intention, that's our objective. So many things we have to work out in between that goal and where we are, but that's our goal, that's our intention. And then the institution of family life becomes something other than the blind well metaphor that was used in previous verses, the blind well. Now, that's not something that we know about in America, because people don't use wells so much. In rural places, they use wells. but then wells are covered generally. But literally speaking, I know somebody who died falling into a blind well. It was horrible. But they were just walking in an evening after the sun had set, so they couldn't see very well. So there was just a grassy area like all the rest of the grassy area, and they stepped into the blind well and died. Very tragic. Entering into family life is being compared, without Krishna consciousness, is compared to that. It's not something you want to do. It's fatal. As far as the mission of human life is concerned, it's fatal. In the first of these two verses, there's this description of a man who becomes too much attached to female association in his next life becomes female. That's teaching here in the third canto, later in the fourth canto. Elaborate description of that comes in the form of King Paranjana, the allegory of a king who is searching for a queen and all of that, and lives with this queen after marrying the queen and has, you know, a full life. And the king, Paranjana, dies thinking of his beloved queen, and his next life becomes a woman because that's what he was thinking of at the time of death. It's the narration is given by Narada. It's allegorical, but it's indicating the same message, the message of whatever you're attached to at the time of death. The mind being attached to that is going to carry the living entity to that, whatever that is. And it's completely natural and completely understandable that the moments of cultivation of our attachment, this moment and the next moment and the next moment and the next moment, is going to build collectively moments of attachment into the strongest of our attachments. It is said that, and at least I don't recall in my previous lives, but it is said that when somebody is approaching death, the moment of death, the mind very quickly reviews in flashes so many events of life, and you get stuck on something that you're particularly attached to, and then you leave the body. So where the mind is attached, that's where you go. So the recommendation is practice becoming attached to Krishna, or bring your thoughts to Krishna in your service, and when chanting, and when hearing, and when associating, and whatever it is that we do, when eating, whatever it is that we do those activities. Very, very powerful is to do activities with love. And love means there's attachment for the object of love, or at least investing in that relationship. Just as we might do in the material world, there's somebody that we make the acquaintance of. We don't know them so well yet, but either consciously or unconsciously, if a relationship is going to develop, then we invest in the relationship. We reach out to the person, we have conversations with the person, we have exchanges of something or other, some food or meal or some kind words or something. We invest in the relationship. And that's what devotional service is investing in our relationship with Krishna. The purpose of those activities is to become attached to Krishna. And then the mind goes to Krishna. Your mind goes to what you're attached to. It's very natural. It happens in this world. It happens in the spiritual world. It happens in this world because it happens in the spiritual world. So the difficulty is the tendency to think of sense enjoyment rather than Krishna's enjoyment, Krishna's sense enjoyment. So for my sense enjoyment, I need property, I need stuff, vastu. And I go around and gather stuff and then have stuff so that I can enjoy with my senses interacting with stuff and consider that happiness. I need different varieties of combinations of things for the purpose of increasing my happiness. Fruit of activity to get that stuff so I can have greater happiness. The paradigm of material enjoyment is born of ignorance. And the original ignorance is ignoring Krishna. And then following that ignorance comes all other ignorances and the entanglement of a living entity. This winding back, you know, the previous chapter is about fruit of activity. And the byproduct of fruit of activity is these things and the consequences of these things. And so here's this affinity for enjoying stuff or objects of the senses. We're hearing that this section is now concluding. There isn't a stronger bond, hard knot of material existence. Is nothing is as strong as sex attraction. It's the strongest. So there's a way to address that, given. Within the codes of scripture, the Vedic culture provides religious means for that activity to be properly guided and situated. Then it can lead to perfection. The final little section here is this Anasaktasya Vishayan Yatarhan Upayunjitaha Nirbandha Krishna Sambandhe Yuktam Vairagya Uchate. That long verse, Prabhupada would often just use the phrase Yukta Vairagya and say that Mahaprabhu taught Yukta Vairagya. So within that Yukta Vairagya's sound vibration is the message of the whole verse and even the companion verse that comes before it. Suffering brings detachment. Ignorance brings suffering. And when one suffers, there's the tendency, one common tendency, is to withdraw from that suffering. So persons that have had it with suffering, then the tendency is negation. Definition by negation. Let there be no suffering. So what's the cause of suffering? Well, I have personal dealings with other people that although I wanted happiness, I got suffering, and so let me make it zero. Definition by negation. Voidism is very specifically expressed in Bhagavad Gita. Voidism. Buddhism is an expression of voidism. Voidism is born of frustration. The verse is Vita Ragabhaya Krodha. One has to go beyond that frustration or raga or bhaya, attachment, fear, and frustration. One must go beyond that in order to become situated properly in devotional service. So, rejecting things because they're sources of misery is incomplete renunciation. Complete renunciation is the Yukta Vairagya principle. which is described. Accepting things which are in relation to Hare Krishna, and utilizing them, engaging them, offering them to Krishna, and accepting those things that are suitable for one, according to one's nature. So that's a big question, what's suited to my nature? So we can take the ashram question. Am I suited to be a brahmachari, suited to be a grihastha, suited to be a vanaprastha, suited to be a sannyasi? What is suited to my nature? So based upon our nature, our psychophysical nature, we accept what is appropriate for us. And then we engage that which is appropriate for us in service to Krishna. It's a perfect description of the stage of perfection that can come from household life, as well as the stage of perfection that can come from any of the other ashrams. Yatarham upayunjitaha. Yatarham means according to suitability. It's an interesting phrase. And what's suitable for one may not be suitable for another, may not be suitable for another, not may not be suitable for another. That's custom-made suitability. And that means there should be some guidance from someone who's not attached to guide us what is a suitable situation for me. We need to be not just a blind follower and dull-headed. The light should be on and we should be contemplating what is my nature, but that also should be guided. Very important. Nirbandha Krishna Sambandhe. Nirbandha Krishna Sambandhe. Nirbandha. Without the attachment to the thing. Nirbandha Krishna Sambandhe. It's but seeing those things that they have their relation with Krishna. Krishna Sambandhe. Yuktam. Engage them in service to Krishna. Yuktam Vairagya. Yuktam Vairagya. Engaging with, so that's the phrase that Prabhupada referred to. Yuktam Vairagya is the teaching of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Yuktam Vairagya. You're like using technology. Is a perfect example of that. By the Yukta Vairagya principle, Prabhupada used microphone. He often would refer to microphone, amplification system, recording devices, the technology of book production and distribution, flying around the world 14 times, using technology. Yukta Vairagya. Not with the mood of being the enjoyer of that, with the mood of this is an opportunity for Krishna service, let me engage this opportunity for Krishna service as is appropriate. Yatarham. Nirbandha. Without attachment to that. If it's there, we use it. If it's not there, we go on with our devotional service some other way. Happily. Okay, any discussion? Comments? Yeah?
In order to be guided, so the guide has to know the person who
yes.
are guided very well in
yes.
order to guide him or her.
Yes.
So how to get the guide to know that person better?
Invest in the relationship, you know, be open-hearted with that person or those persons that are closely guiding you. Be let your life be an open book, let your heart be an open book, share, and then be ready when sharing to receive some input that says whatever it says. Then someone can know you. That's, you know, the other qualified person to guide. That's how. It's not, that question wasn't who, it's how. So that's how. Communicate openly, regularly with that person or those persons who are guiding. Be introspective, share openly, receive feedback openly. And then that person can understand and help you to understand yourself better. Very natural process. Yeah.
Maharaj, sometimes it occurs to me that if I have that resource, probably I'd be able to serve Krishna better or Maharaj better.
Yes, it's very common.
So, do we aspire to get that so that we can serve better?
For the sake of the recording, I'm going to repeat the question. Sometimes we think, if I had such and such facility or resource, I could do my service better. And is it okay to strive to acquire that resource so you can do your service better? That's your question. Yes. And then with two qualifiers or conditions. Not obsessive, but if Krishna so desires, kind of a mood. And then the effort should be, reasonable, not excessive. Too much endeavor, it's one of the causes of fall down or weakening bhakti. Too much endeavor. It's one of the six things that destroys bhakti. Prayasa. Prayasa means endeavor. We make endeavor. But that which is reasonable and without it, attachment, oh, it's got to happen. Without it, I can't do my service. If that was the case, we wouldn't have a Hare Krishna movement. Prabhupada came with nothing. And for a whole year, he had nothing. So he could have said, well, Krishna didn't give it to me, so I give up. Yes?
It appears to me that the emotional attachment looks more stronger than sexual attachment.
They go hand in hand. And, one can have an emotional attachment without sex indulgence. Certainly. However, if it continues to proceed to the point of sexual indulgence, then bondage becomes even more strong. That's the teaching the Prabhupada would consistently give. But just winding back from other verses on this topic, kind of putting it simply, one thing leads to the next. Or behind the mental, there's the enjoying spirit. Now, supposing somebody was fully attached to Krishna, fully attached to Krishna, like Haridas Thakur, fully attached to Krishna. And here comes a beautiful woman in the dead of night. No one's around. And she's literally seducing him in various ways. No attraction. It wasn't a matter of self-restraint. There was no attraction. So supposing it's somebody that's less strong than Haridas, there may be some attachment in the mind, but where does it lead to? It's in this world, it's like dominoes. It's common. It doesn't always end up in that place, but it's common. Or, you know, the restraint may be there by religious principle or moral principle or law principle or something or other. But, you know, the itch is there. Someone may not scratch it, but the itch is there. It's part of the program of material existence. So the response is yes, but. Anything else? Yes, Mataji?
When I was talking about attachment, mother's attachment to the children is natural.
It's natural.
So how do we see that?
You elevate that natural attachment to the spiritual platform by understanding that the person who you are feeling attachment for, the child, is a spirit soul. And my duty as parent, mother in your case, my duty is, duty to Krishna is to assist the soul in their journey to Krishna. Then you spiritualize that attachment. You see all those feelings and the things that accompany those feelings, the everything, cooking and cleaning and caring and hugging and all the things that one does, has, you know, for the mental, the physical, and the spiritual well-being and wholesomeness of the soul, so the soul can make their journey to Krishna best. You just spiritualize. They're natural. You spiritualize them. Put Krishna in the center. So what does that mean, put Krishna in the center? Well, you're part and parcel of Krishna, and the child is part and parcel of Krishna, and Krishna is in the center. It's service to Krishna. He's in the center. Doesn't mean I don't care. It means Krishna is in the center. So this is service to Krishna. Krishna is very kind. He's given me, in this embodied condition as a woman, a child to care for. So motherly affection is powerful. Krishna is very kind. Now let me utilize that which Krishna has given in service to Krishna. You spiritualize. It's not just words, it's a powerful spiritual feeling, experience, and internal potency. It just transfers affection to the spiritual platform, attachment to the spiritual platform. It's easy to say, it's another thing to do, but that's the principle. Yes?
My father in India is undergoing a major health crisis, the kidney failure and all that, so he's going through a lot of pain and lamenting a lot. Mm-hmm. So my mind is constantly going there and I'm feeling bad that I'm not able to go help and no children are with him, and he has to undergo that all by himself, and I'm here because my children are here and their life. And so what do I do? My mind is constantly worrying for him and feeling bad that he's undergoing this, and
there's a wonderful prayer of amongst Queen Kunti's prayers that addresses this specifically. The situation is different, but the principle is the same. Kunti's observing Krishna's leaving. She knows, because her father and that side of her family life, they're in Dwarka. They're missing Krishna's association. Krishna returns, they'll be very happy having Krishna's association. But that means then she and the Pandavas, because she has to stay with the Pandavas, she can't, she's, she could go with Krishna, I suppose, but she's there to be, you know, the mother of the Pandavas, staying in Hastinapur. So the Pandavas will be missing Krishna's association, so she's torn. If you go, there's sadness. If you stay, there's sadness. And, you know, so she prays to Krishna, in essence, please remove the material portion of my affection and leave only the spiritual portion of my affection. You can't, you know, you can't leave your children. You could short term do something like that if there's some arrangement for your children, depend on their age and so forth and the circumstances. But that's your primary responsibility. They're dependent. So as mother, that's your primary duty. This other one is, you know, a desired service, but so you have to sort out in practical terms what can be done. Then on the transcendental side, you pray to Krishna that let my mind become freed from this turbulence of affinity on two sides, and I can't be, I'm not so elastic, I can't be on both sides. So please remove the material portion so I can see clearly what is the right thing for me, and my affection is reposed with you. I'm depending upon you to maintain my life and my the well-being of my father and my children. We're dependent on you. So like, it doesn't necessarily mean you all of a sudden become elastic. It just means that, you know, the turbulence of being torn in these two directions, it just goes to the spiritual side. We're ultimately dependent upon Krishna. And now I have duties given my embodied condition. So it's more a matter of managing the emotion by spiritualizing your consciousness than it is by, you know, somehow making a practical solution for both things. When your consciousness goes to that place, then maybe a practical solution, or at least a better solution than the present circumstance, may arise. When your intelligence is cleared. Okay. Yes?
What is the thing about the children? That by practicing Krishna consciousness, to some extent we can understand that Krishna has given his children and my service towards them. And but when I see that, you know, there is a struggle, again, maybe it is mixed, you know, the service and also part of attachment also, but it really...
When you see the struggle means that the children are struggling.
Struggling.
Okay.
Yeah.
And your then mom sees the struggle and, they're struggling.
Mm-hmm.
So?
Maybe it's part of attachment and also little service move, but it's so much of concern about that, how they're not able to really get into the depths of Krishna consciousness, but not wanting to. It's not that they doesn't have any interest or anything, but when I see, you know, that struggle, I feel like, you know, I'm not able to do anything, and my mind goes to that verse that, no, one should not become a mother, a parent, or a guru to one who is not able to deliver the dependent. And I don't know what is my responsibility to in that.
Good question. Your responsibility is to make the arrangements and then allow others, whether it's your own children or others in other categories, to make their choices. That's what you're to do. You create an atmosphere that's conducive and allow them to make their choices. You can't make their choices. They make their choices. Best is the training happens even before conception, and then conception, and then, you know, gestation and birth, and, you know, from the very beginning. Best. And if that hasn't been there, then at whatever point in time the light goes on, it says, "Wow, this is the mission of life." Then you according to the Krishna consciousness that Krishna has endowed you with, you then, as a parent, you make a conducive atmosphere, set a good example, and allow the dependents, the children, the objects of your affection, to encourage them to make wise choices with the resources provided. And especially Prabhupada's teaching is when bodies develop to that teenage stage, too much control from the parent's side is a bad idea. It invites rebellion. I mean, not intentionally, and not even from the other side intentionally, but just it invites rebellion. So therefore, the best policy for teenage being the parent of a teenager is the role changes from whatever it was to just be a good friend. Of course, the senior in that friendship, but friend. Hearing, understanding, appreciating, gently guiding, but leaving lots of room for wise decision making. And if the decision making turns out to be not so wise, don't switch into the control mode, like it may have been when before teenage life. It's just part of parenting. It's a mistake to own the problem emotionally. Then you lose the detached intelligence to understand what's best in the circumstance. Intelligence becomes clouded. Caring doesn't stop, but controlling is and owning the struggle. You care about the struggle, but the art of detached caring is something that parents need to know or learn. They don't know, especially in the teenage stage of life. You know that the values that as a parent you have imparted since the beginning of the child's growing up, that's with them. You've done that, and now certain choices are being made about whatever, career and social and so forth. You've done your part in formation of character, and now you're just there as a friend to continue to help guide making wise choices. Again, easier said than done, but that's you'll have much more access to the heart of a teenager by adopting that role or mood than, you know, getting an anxiety over, you know, a struggle and a challenge. And then, you know, the child will be less likely to share things because mom gets all worked up over this. I'm just not going to share it with mom. That's not desirable. Let them share and you don't get all worked up. You care and you express that care. You act as a friend, a well-wisher. Parenting. It's an endless topic. Any other? Okay, see the problem.